Audio hosting for comics are great is provided by Kablam, KABLAM.com, the one-stop printing solution for independent comics publishers. This time on the show,
comics are for everybody.
Exquisitely grotesque.
And watch how he makes his money. All this and more on Comics Are Great. That we're back for Comics Are Great, the visual storytelling show, recorded live at the Ann Arbor District Library Netcast Studio in lovely downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan, on the corner of 5th and William, AEDL.org. My name is Jersey Droz. I'm a cartoonist and teaching artist, and we're about to kick off our new season of the show, even though this is episode, 44 or something like that. But yeah, it's a new year, new show, new equipment coming in that you can see if you're watching it on the video. And thanks, AADL.org. And we got new guests. Well, old returning guests. But so, should I just introduce you guys? And then we'll get to our topic. What do you say? Hey, Steph, haven't talked to you in a long time.
Well, if you listened to me when I was 16, you might remember me.
Yeah.
This is a long time ago.
We go back.
We go way back.
We're tight.
So I was Jersey's student in high school. I grew up in Ann Arbor, and now I live in New York. But
Stephanie Mannheim, I should say.
Yeah,
StephanieMannheim.com.
And I do mini comics. This is here. I'm gonna put this here. This is my comic.
Oh yeah.
Nate the Nonconformist is one of the many comics I do. This is the newest one. So.
What is the, let's leave it there for a second while we talk about it. Because what is Nate the Nonconformist?
It's about a teenager who tries like way too hard to be cool and rebel and be a punk. So, but he's like not very good at it. So his idea of rebellion is like going to Hot Topic or something. Like, and he thinks he's like such a rebel. So basically,
and yelling at everybody else around him for being conformist.
Yeah.
And what I love about these stories is typically the people who he's yelling at are not that bad people. They're just nice guys who just like music and whatever.
Yeah.
But he's like, you can't borrow my albums or what? Oh, which album was it? I don't remember. But
Rocket to Russia was that.
But it also, as I said before, anybody who's listened to my stuff for any amount of time knows that you draw the most disgusting kissing scenes in the history of comics.
Well, thank you, Jersey.
That's going to be on your.
No, you know what? I'm known for the chests.
Oh, yeah, that too. And, in your comments.
I'm intrigued.
Women have kind of grandmother-like chests. Let me see if I can find an example in here. Oh, but the end paper here is like pus and. hold on a second. Yeah, but you can find my work at StephanieMannheim.com, and I'm also in a cartooning collective, New York City based, called Coffee Spoons Comics.
Tighter on the mic, kiddo.
With other college students. So, yeah, so here's like typical breasts I draw.
We're going to talk more about your fascination with very, very. Sometimes disturbing comics, but always awesome comics.
Well, thank you.
And but we also should say that you're a former Ann Arbor resident. You now live in New York City.
I now live in New York City.
Doing exciting stuff in New York City.
Yeah, so it's really great.
You worked with Tom Hart.
I worked with Tom Hart before he moved to Florida, and he started the Sequential Artist Workshop. And just want to say Tom is one of the best teachers Tom is one of the best teachers I have, and I'm really he and his wife have been going through some rough times recently, and I really hope they I really wish the best for them right now.
Lauren Weinstein started a fund for that.
Yes,
Tom Hart and his wife, they lost their young daughter recently. Yeah. And Lauren Weinstein started a fund, and there was a big outpouring for them, and our hearts go out to both of them. Hope
and actually
well.
At this point I think the fund is over, and they raised a lot of money, and now they want you to donate to this charity about sudden death in childhood. I don't know exactly the website. You could probably go to Lauren's website and check that out.
LaurenWeinstein.com, I believe.
I think so.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
it is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you can go there for more information about that. But, yes, a great talent and a terrible loss, and a hard time to him. You also work on, geez, what don't you do? You work on the Columbia Daily Spectator as a cartoonist.
Yeah,
cartoonist.
Where I go to school. Yeah, so I'm a cartoonist there, an illustrator, I kind of get other people, kind of try to rope other people in to illustrate stuff too.
So you subcontract.
Whatever that means, I do it. Yeah, and I also got to intern at Center for Cartoon Studies last summer, and I also got to work at Augenblick Studios.
Tell us about this. You blogged about this. It looked like an amazing experience.
I worked at Augenblick Studios last spring and summer on the show Ugly Americans, which was really great. And I mean, this is the only studio I've actually worked for, so I don't really know what it's like to work for like a bigger studio. But this was a very small, kind of independent studio. And they had really great people working for them, and a lot of people were into like indie comics. And actually, the owner of the studio, Aaron Augenblick, got a Zarek grant back in the day, and he's really awesome. And then they had Jason Little work there, and Bob Sikoriak, who I guess he goes by R. Sikoriak in the books that he publishes, but they both worked there, and they both do indie comics, and the people there were so great. And I did like in-betweens and stuff, background cleanup.
In-betweens. Explain that for those who don't know anything about animation. What
so basically, like the lead animators do like the main kind of frames, and then
like the key frames, the like key frames, moments.
And then I have animation. To go in and do the like in-between stuff.
So like if I like a keyframe would be I reach for my bottle of water. That's here's keyframe one.
Yeah.
Keyframe two, I'm drinking the water.
Yeah.
You poor sap. You gotta draw all those frames in between.
Yeah. But I learned a lot about just like having a very clean drawing and being able to draw off like model sheets and stuff like that. I realized because there's a point when if you can like really draw, if you really understand like how the body works and life drawing and stuff. I mean, I don't draw people that look anything like real people, but like I feel like if you understand how the body works, you can kind of adapt to any style, which is cool.
So you have a deeper appreciation for knowing your fundamentals, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Because, like, you know, I'm sure you've heard when you were in art school or when you were in high school, for that matter.
Yeah. I was never in art school. Just disclosure, I'm a sociology major, actually. I'm not studying art. So, and I don't go to art school.
You already got it down pat. You don't need to study art in school, right?
Well, no. I got into art school, and I had to make the big decision where do I go to art school or do I just go to get, like, a liberal arts education and study art. Everything I do outside of school is art, and I chose the latter.
I bet your instructors, like people like Tom Hart, probably told you that having a background in this stuff is important if you want to be a graphic novelist.
Tom told me... he said, don't go to art school. That's what he said. And Lauren...
But support the sequential art.
Lauren, all right, Tom, but I mean, he recommends different things to different people, and he just...
Sure, depending on the student, yes.
Yeah, depending on the student. I know people who go to art school and love it, and I probably would love it too, but I also wanted the chance to learn other stuff that I probably wouldn't be motivated enough to learn on my own.
And getting a liberal arts degree is going to broaden your experiences, make you a better writer.
All of that stuff.
So I want to ask Gail Williams, who's returning to the show, Gail of patbird.gailstar.com, Kelvern on the Twitters. Former New York City resident, now living in Ann Arbor.
We swapped.
Wait, when did you move here?
Last August, I think.
So we overlapped like a year in New York.
Smooth.
Oh my God.
And yet, I never. Oh my bad.
So I'm wondering, Gail, are you missing New York City right now, listening to all of Stephanie's stories, or is Ann Arbor pretty darn cool in its own right? Tell me.
They're both pretty darn cool, actually. Yeah. It's more about like the people you meet and what you get to do, I think.
Yeah.
End of things.
but yeah. So, and Gail, you're also going to be doing a presentation at one of our future comics artist forums here, right?
I am, yeah, in May.
Is that right? May?
That is, yeah.
You're going to be doing some digital...
talking about flatting comics digitally.
a presentation on flatting comics digitally, which is there's a science to it, actually, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's like a methodology to it, right?
Yeah. Just you know, keeping speed up, doing it so that the person you're doing it for, you know, it's most convenient for them, I think, is an important thing. Unless it's just for you, in which case, go crazy.
Yeah, right. But if you're doing it for somebody else, or even if you're doing it for yourself, having some kind of a system in place will make sure that it's easy for you to edit it after the fact.
Oh, definitely.
Early on, I would flat my pages and then do the editing on the color flats. And then when it's time to go back and edit the color, like, oh, this needs to be purple, as needs to be red. It's like, oh, no. Breaking out the lasso tool quite a bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to that. Because you did some flatting for me, and I was mightily impressed with how logical and clear they were. But yeah, we should talk about petbird.gelser.com. What's that comic all about?
It is about a bird and dinosaur who are based on me and my boyfriend having their crazy adventures and living. It's pretty auto-bio with an occasional fantastical twist.
We got to meet some of your future in-laws in some of the recent stories. Well, no, it was your dad, wasn't it, who was the crazy the dinosaur with the beard.
Yeah.
Who does some pretty wild things in the comic strip.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he looks a lot like Santa in person, so it was fun to take that and go crazy with it.
So it is a tough thing to describe. It is fantasy, but it is autobio, but it's autobio with focusing on like the lighter, funnier moments and sillier moments of life, right?
It's not
you sitting in a park going, oh, life sucks.
No, that would be no fun.
Those are the books I'm recommending.
So, yes, okay, I want to back up and talk about topic real quick because we spent a little bit of time introducing you guys, reintroducing you guys to everybody. Since this was the first episode of the new season, I thought, well, let's back up and do a talk on why comics are so great. And Stephanie, you and I were talking on the phone recently, and you were talking about how it's weird sometimes how comics has all of these different little camps. Right, yeah. You've got like web cartoonists, you've got indie cartoonists, you've got people who work in the Marvel DC direct market. Then you have people who call themselves graphic novelists, and all these people aren't aware of each other, whether it's intentional or not.
Yeah,
and it was a reminder to me that so many people. I mean, as a guy who does a lot of workshops and advocacy in the Ann Arbor area, I meet so many people who are like, "Oh yeah, there was an article actually I just posted on Twitter. I'll have to look it up, find the link. Somebody wrote an article about like he interviewed a guy why he didn't read comics.
I read that.
Did you read that? Yeah, you want to tell us about it? What did that guy talk about? I mean, it was really upsetting to read.
It was. It was just like, I don't want to read about, what, guys dressing up in tights and then wrestling? What is this? Did you watch WWE as a kid? Well, yeah.
But that's different if you wear a cape, you know?
Yeah.
Like the guy who wrote the article inserted a picture of Hulk Hogan wearing a big cape with like a feather boa kind of thing. But yeah, but it was basically, this guy had all these preconceived notions that comics, like so many adults, that comics is just a bunch of people in their underwear beating each other.
Well, even children. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying like when I was a kid, I thought all comics were people beating them up, but I didn't know about like a lot. I mean, the only comics I read as a kid were comic strips and Nickelodeon magazines. So, I mean, lots of people all ages don't know that much about comics.
Yeah, let's talk about, because when I first met you, Steph, you were, what, 14?
Oh, my God. Oh, jeez, you're going to embarrass me so much.
What? Story time.
You're going to tell me about my, like, horrible phases and what I used to read.
Your blossom phase. No. I mean, like, hey, yeah. We all got to start. Okay, all right, all right, right.
Okay, all right. Go ahead. The secret's out.
This is not to embarrass you, because actually you liked good stuff. It's just you liked manga, right? Like a lot of girls that age.
Yeah.
You know, your entry point was manga. And I was excited about it, because I was excited that there was this manga like craze in the United States, because I saw so many girls showing up to my comics workshops.
The thing is, I turned 11, 12 or so, there was like this really big manga boom, and they were all suddenly like the manga section in like Barnes and Noble, Borders, whatever, like got enormous. And right like a year or so after that, I had my bat mitzvah and I got all these like Borders gift cards, which I mean now would be useless. But I went and I was like, oh my god, look at all these comics, and like, oh, I can relate to some of the stuff in these, I'm gonna buy them. So I was really excited, and some of it was terrible, and some of it was really great. So,
like Rumiko Takahashi,
Yeah, so that was basically all I really knew about comics at that point.
Sure,
because it was
of
everywhere.
Course.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I know it's nothing to be ashamed of. But
yeah, it's, I mean, it's not because that's where they were accessible. That's where you could find them, right? Because like, and something I asked in a lot of my comics workshops when I'm teaching teens, is I say, who here knows where their local comic store is? And outside of Ann Arbor, I mean, everybody knows about the Vault of Midnight in Ann Arbor. But outside of Ann Arbor, everybody's like, huh, what? Where did I find a comic store?
Yeah. The problem is there aren't that many good comic stores. There are a lot of comic book stores that aren't very accessible to like a person who's like new to comics and wants to come in and find something. Like, a lot of times, the people working there aren't going to be as friendly as they could be to, like,
There was even some bad experiences locally once upon a time. Not at Vault, but at other places.
Well, Vault is definitely one of the better stores, I think.
Yeah, it is. But anyway, not all stores are created equal. But anyway, I want to fast forward just a couple years. So I meet you in 14, and I mentioned Rumiko Takahashi in one of my classes, and you went, oh, I love your stuff! And, fast forward just like 4 years later.
No, it was like 2 years. I didn't see you for like a year.
Okay.
And then I come back. I'm like 15 and I just discovered Peter Bagg. And I was like, oh, hey, Jersey, have you heard of this?
And I'm like, yeah, I've read this
and
stuff.
You were like, I remember you being really disturbed when I
was disturbed that there was a 16-year-old girl showing me some of the stuff that was in some of these indie comics.
If I were a 16-year-old boy, would you be disturbed by
that?
Yes,
I would.
Okay.
I'd say, but at the same time, I understood. Like, you know, it's like when you're that age, this stuff is... Well, I don't want to even go into that psychology. What's interesting to me is that here you were just a couple years before, and you were the poster child for the manga craze. Ah, Rumiko Takahashi, kawaii. And
then, All right. Back up. Okay. That was a lie. I never said kawaii. I didn't dress up in costumes. I actually really did not like the community. I mean, there are good things about it, but I was pretty uncomfortable with the community surrounding manga and
excitable.
Yeah, it was it was too much for me. I was totally
not trying to put you on the defensive with this stuff. I promise you. What I was trying to describe was that here is an excellent example of somebody whose entry point was manga, and then a couple years later, you found the thing that gripped you and took you by the throat and really defined where you went as an artist for like where your career is going. And so you discovered independent comics like Peter Bagg, Daniel Klaus, what else? Robert Crumb. Robert Crumb was a big one that you kept bringing into my house.
My dad, when I turned 17, my dad, who was, he grew up in New York in like late 60s, early 70s. He was a teenager, and he had all these Crumb comics from then, so he gave those to me when I turned 17, and I thought those were really, really inspired me.
Yeah. So, like, you wouldn't have written Nate the Nonconformist when you were 14, is what I'm saying.
Oh, no. Of course not. No, yeah. I wouldn't have. But.
So my point is that comics has a rich and varied... It's not a genre. It is a medium, and there's lots and lots to be chosen from. And just like books and just like films and everything, we know this, that there's something for everybody. So to demonstrate that fact, this is the episode we do. This is our advocacy episode to really make the statement that comics are indeed great. We brought a whole bunch of different comics to talk about. Instead of doing it being like a review show of like, hey, what's in previews this week? No, we're going to dig all over the spectrum of comics, and we're going to, old, new, web, print only, and we're going to talk about who wants to start with something that they just are insufferable about. They just can't stop talking about this book. What's a book that you guys have read that you brought today that you just can't get enough of? Or do you want me to start? Go, Steph.
Oh, okay. So I'm gonna just go with my favorite, which is Peter Bagg's Buddy Does Seattle. And actually this along with, I'm gonna kind of put these two together. The Bradleys and Buddy Does Seattle.
Both in the Ann Arbor District Library's collection.
Which are both, I took them from the, I left them at my place in New York, and I didn't know I was going to do this podcast still. But by the way, I'm visiting my family right now, so I left my stuff at my place, and then I called Jersey, and he's like, want to be on a podcast? So I kind of grabbed these from the library, but this is probably my favorite comic ever, and it's about... Basically, it's about this guy, Buddy Bradley, and this first book here, The Bradleys, he's a teenager.
There you go.
Right there. So here he is. He's a teenager. He's like a pimply teenager and kind of like just like a regular kind of slacker, moody, like pot smoking teenager. And this is about him and his dysfunctional family. And this book completely changed my life, basically.
How so?
So I was like 16 and I was just like this cynical, like bitter 16-year-old. And I was looking, I was like, couldn't really find any comics that I really like, really liked, really spoke to me. And then I picked this up and I looked at it.
So this speaks to the cynical 16-year-old. How so? What does he do? What does he do with the art and the writing that makes
well,
you...
Well, all right. Well, what I love about the... I mean, this speaks to anybody. I like this even more. I mean, I could say that I like this even more now. I just feel like I found this at the right time, at the right time in my life. But this is really great because basically he just... Everybody in his comics just go crazy.
Very wild characters,
cartoony art. I mean, there's like a lot of... There's kind of like a Tex Avery thing going on here, but then it's also just... There's something really unique. They just really go crazy. And it's just like you really... I feel like you really understand kind of the underlying emotions with all of it. And it's just... Even though it's super exaggerated and stuff, there's something just really realistic just about, like, they really pinpoint how these people feel, and there's just this kind of rage that everybody has.
It's like Tex Avery art that doesn't shy away from, like, the worst in people.
Yeah,
too, right?
It's just, it's really just, it's kind of grotesque, but, like, also really appealing at the same time.
See, you like some artists who do a really good job of capturing the grotesque beautifully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, like Basil Wolverton, and Johnny Ryan,
Arkrum, yeah, where there's what was the other one? Black Hole,
Charles Burns, he's crazy because he does his, I mean, like his ink work is gorgeous, and then he'll draw people with like boils on their faces and stuff.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah. So there's like this weird dichotomy of like exquisite disgustingness or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What kind of music would you say would like be a good soundtrack for a Peter Bagg comic? Like, if you like this kind of music,
say,
you like this.
Well, I was gonna say like the Ramones would be a good kind of soundtrack, but their approach to music is very different from Peter Bagg's approach to comics. Just in that he's very... All right, this is gonna sound super nerdy. He's like,
this is the show to do it. Yeah.
Oh my god! All right, so There's this very, like, I feel like if somebody really did a comic that with the soundtrack of the Ramones, it would be drawn a lot simpler and a lot more, like, you don't need to know how to draw. I mean, I love the Ramones, but I don't know, it has the same kind of energy. It just has this very, very kind of fast-paced and just kind of wild, really great, really fun. And so this was a really great book. And then,
well let me ask you also this. I want for the reader who has not read this, who's never heard of Peter Bagg, because you know, some people haven't. What we said, if you like the Ramones, you probably like Peter Bagg. What kind of movie? What would your favorite movie have to be to enjoy a Peter Bagg?
I would
Bagg
say book? I don't know, like a Kevin Smith film or something like that. Just like, I don't know, that's kind of different, but. Because that's not less this book and more like Buddy Does Seattle, because this is about people in their 20s and kind of slackers. So,
okay.
But
what about something like Juno or...
Juno could work.
Because it's got that kind of like dry wit to it.
I mean, Juno, I can see that too. Mm-hmm.
Like, I wouldn't compare it directly to Juno, but I'm just saying, like,
I can see that. If you're into like kind of like weird, kind of more weirder films, then...
Oh, what was that other new indie movie that I just saw? Like, any indie movie with like young 20 somethings with like a lot of laurels on it, you'd probably enjoy, like a Peter Bagg book. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
You know, like that new one about like the young couple, and then they're in
like
their mid
30s. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they all talk in monotone like this, and they're very sad, and then she gets pregnant and they don't know what they're going to do, and they got a cat and the cat talks.
You know what I'm talking about? Duke now?
No. No, like the trailer starts with the cat talking. Have you seen this, Gail? You know
what
I'm talking
about?
I forget what it's called. Somebody in the chat can help me out.
The only thing I can think of is Marmaduke.
The cat actually like kind of narrates part of the story in this ironic way.
I've never heard of this. I don't really go out to the movies that much anymore because it's so expensive. It's so expensive in New York.
How much is a movie in New York?
Like $14 or something.
I don't even want to.
How much is the popcorn?
Five at least.
So okay, and then the soda. You call it soda there, right?
Yeah. I called it soda growing up too, because my dad's from New York and my mom's from Philly.
Well, and soda is a beverage, whereas pop
call it
is
soda.
Your dad.
They both called it soda. So
okay, you grew up soda. Using the correct word.
Yeah, I call it the real thing.
Anyway, but yeah, so you don't go to movies much. But anyway, okay, so we got that. Go ahead.
But I'm kind of going to move on to, okay if I kind of go into
The Future is the name of that film I was talking about. Lorian in the chat.
Thanks, Lori.
Yes, the film is called The Future. If you like people walking around with sad blank expressions and mumbling and talking cat.
I'm full of emotion.
Like the Peter Bag, I wouldn't say is very like mumbly though, or like navel gazing or anything.
No,
it's a lot more kind of just loud and a lot more kind of crazy. I don't know.
Yeah, it's more like has like kind of like the energy of like the Muppet Show or something, but or like with like the attitude of the Ramones.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
There we go.
It's got that. If the Muppets and Tex Avery and the Ramones kind of became one.
So there we go.
Yeah.
And that's why I think Peter Bag's stuff is cool. I don't think his stuff is awful. I was surprised. I was surprised that such a young, sweet girl who loved Rumiko Takahashi suddenly said, "Look what I like now." And I went, "What? Where did that come from?"
Well, I don't know if you remember. Well, this is kind of when I was into manga. I started out reading like the shoujo like magical girl stuff. I was like 11. And then I started ooh, there's like more stuff out here I can read. And I started reading kind of weirder stuff, and I feel like by the end I was reading like Chroma Marti High School or whatever, which is about these thugs that like just like punch
they are
each
ridiculous
other. They're like really stupid, and it was and like Dr. Slump, which is about like talking poop and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
Dr. Slump.
So I feel like I kind of started reading like the more and more like kind of weird stuff as I went on with that, and then I kind of just jumped over to this.
Okay, but we gotta move fast. So
all right, one more thing.
All
right, so this book is about. Sorry, we kind of went off on a tangent, but this book is about Buddy's 24. He lives in Seattle. And basically, it's really great because it's so true to life, even though it's so exaggerated. It basically captures everything about being in your 20s, like early 20s, and just like kind of like being broke and having bad roommates and just like all of that.
And losing your stuff over things, right?
Like, yeah, just all of that. And I mean, like, I loved this when I was a teenager. I read this again this year and I could relate to it even more. And I feel like if I read it again when I'm 24, I'll like it even better. So,
all right. So I want to do a really fast one. So on a related note, to show you that I'm not a total square and all, I don't just, watch Jim Henson movies night and day. Eddie Campbell, The Fate of the Artist, put up my first second, I believe. I want to say first second. Did this? Yes, they did. And it's a collection of, you know, vignettes and little like slice of life moments by Eddie Campbell. But I'll tell you, my favorite strips in it is the Angry Cook strips, which are about his wife, like where somebody pleasantly asks her to do something like, "Oh, could you make spaghetti?" And she completely loses her marbles. Every strip is her swearing, is the constant stream of swears and hitting things and smashing things and then losing her stuff at the end, completely losing her mind. But it's a beautiful book with lots of different kinds of art. He's got all these little different send-ups to different kinds of comic strips where he does these fake comic strips called Honeybee and Our Problem Child. And then even little Fumetti strips in here where I believe he's talking with his daughter. He has conversations with his daughter and he turns it into a comic strip as well. Eddie Campbell's most known for doing From Hell, the Alan Moore comic graphic novel. He also did a comic series in the late 80s, early 90s called Bacchus, which was the story of the Roman god come down to Earth and getting involved in mafia wars with the Eyeball Kid. And fantastic series, fantastic book. I love his art. He's got like this really expressive, very squiggly kind of art style. I think you'd if you haven't read him stuff, I think you'd actually like him.
Oh, yeah.
But also just very introspective and thoughtful, and definitely for grown-ups. Not something that I think that a kid would really get or like very much. But if you're an adult looking for a thoughtful, introspective book with a lot of really clever wit, Fate of the Artist by Eddie Campbell is what I would. It's in the library's collection. So, okay, Gail, you're up.
Okay, 20th Century Boys. It is not a conventional manga style. I'll start off by saying that. This is by Naoki Urasawa. He's also done Pluto and Monster. So he's very suspense, thriller, unfolding of brilliant plot kind of deal. So this one's about a failed rock star convenience store owner named Kenji, whose childhood friend commits suicide. He thinks there's more to it, starts piecing together clues, and it turns out there's this cult whose actions are oddly similar to games that he and his friends played as kids. So he has to try and like stop world destruction and piece together the clues in time and you save the world. It's cool.
Okay, what kind of music would you compare this to?
Ooh, well, it's in the title, so I'm going to say T-Rex.
what?
Yeah. A lot of it is set in the early 70s, late 60s. So very rock and roll, love and peace.
Cool. What kind of film would you say, like, if you love this film, you should read this book?
Ooh.
I know, it's toughy. A lot of really good manga kind of defies our genre expectations, right? You can't just plug it into some like blockbuster like Born Identity. You're gonna love 20th Century Boys.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Just like definitely something with like an intricate plot, lots of twists and turns, suspenseful and exciting.
also, Urasawa's characterization, what he does with his characters' faces is really good. He can like do something with like a twist of a lip to make you go like, it'll either break your heart or make you laugh hysterically, you know? So it's partially, see, this is something that I think is like an analogy we can make. I don't like to make comics to film analogies too often because I think it confuses people. And I also like to point out the distinctions between comics and film. But if we accept the fact that the cartoonist's job in a comic is to act for the characters, you're every actor on the stage, right? Then we should point to that when, like, say, like Buddy Bradley or rather Peter Bagg's stuff, very ham-fisted acting, very scream, throw everything up in the air kind of acting. Whereas Urasawa's stuff is a little bit more subdued, a little bit more layered, a little bit more like Liam Neeson kind of acting. Maybe does that seem like a fair comparison, Gail?
Seems fair to me.
Okay. All right, lightning round. We only got 15 minutes before Eli gets here. So what do you got next, Stephanie?
All right, so next, this is a little more of the navel-gazing kind of stuff. Jeffrey Brown, Little Things. He's written a lot of books, but I'd recommend this as a starter if you've never read Jeffrey Brown, because I feel like his artwork getting more polished. It's all pretty rough. He has a lot of art training, but he purposely decided to draw in this very rough style, so it looks like it's out of his sketchbook, or he actually does draw it in his sketchbook, and basically these are all short stories from his life.
And what kind of stories from his life?
About, like, breakups, or just, like, kind of just everyday things that happen to him, or there's one with a car accident in here.
Are these knitted together into like one solid narrative, or is it like a series of shorts?
No, this is more of a series of short, different narratives. Some of his books have one long narrative, and a lot of his, he's probably best known for his ones about his breakups, and this does have some of that in here, but it also has other things about his life. But he's such a good storyteller, and he's just like you feel like you kind of get to know him by reading it.
The thing I notice about his stuff too is I have the Incredible Change Bots that he did.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that Transformers send up.
So funny. Oh my god, he's
and
so funny.
He intentionally drew it in the style that looks like it was done with markers, like in a kid's notebook kind of thing, right? And that was the moment when I looked at that, I said, this is like the comics I was writing when I was in eighth grade about Transformers. And it felt just coming out with that 13-year-old, 14-year-old voice. And I get that from this, too. It's like sort of like looking at a lot of like early 20-something anxiety through the voice of a 14-year-old. Yeah. Does that sound fair?
Yeah, definitely. Well, he has also, he does kind of have this more childlike drawing that he kind of adds. And he's just really brilliant in how he does that. It's so great.
Music?
Love it. I'd say maybe Andrew Bird, which actually they do have a whole... There's a whole story in here about Andrew Bird. And and I love Andrew Bird too, so... but it has the same kind of...
Of course you do, Film? Film?
I would say this is a lot more of the kind of what you were saying. I would say maybe if you liked like Garden State or something, you'd probably like this.
Yeah, Garden State with a lot of those slow shots, just looking at the guy while he's kind of looking up at the sky, sad.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty good comparison with Jeffrey Brown. So cool. Yeah, if you enjoy Garden State, if you enjoy Andrew Bird, you will like Little Things, a memoir in slices by Jeffrey Brown. Lorian was posting in the chat back to the 20th Century Boys book. She said that Memento has the same intensity, confusing but intriguing time skips.
Okay.
Have you seen Memento?
If I have, it's been a while. I honestly can't remember.
The one where the guy like wakes up and he doesn't remember anything and he has little notes that he made to himself and the story goes backwards and everybody got excited about the backwards storytelling. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so okay, there we go. We got the movie comparison. If you like Memento, you'll like 20th Century Boys. All right,
awesome.
I guess it's my turn. Okay, now let's represent for the superhero guys, because this is a book that everybody has heard of, but so few people I know have actually read it.
I've never heard of this.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No.
No, you have.
This is the comic that got me to be a cartoonist. This is my...
Maybe I have. I don't know.
This was my manga. This is my entry point, Crisis in Infinite Earths. Now, okay, on paper, it's a dumb idea. It was a 12-issue series conceived to knit together 30 to 50 years worth of continuity that was all conflicting. There was like multiple Supermen, multiple Flashes. Well, let's make it all one cohesive thing where there's only one definitive Superman. And it was just a big... marketing events. It tied into a whole bunch of other comics. So yes, it was very crass and it was very marketing, but it was also really exceptionally written for what it was, where it was essentially the Odyssey, but with DC comic superheroes. It's every superhero in the DC universe versus one guy. And when you look at these covers by George Perez, it's like, look at the density on there, man. So, okay, you take a crass idea and then you make art out of it like they did, where you look at these pages and there are upwards of 14 panels on every page. And it's very, very dense but very clear. That's a challenge. I defy anybody to try to do that. Do that kind of density of action and storytelling, changing scenes, and still have it be readable. And look at how many word balloons are on these pages. They don't do like superhero comics like this anymore. But the reason that I would point people at it is, regardless of whatever genre of storytelling you like, is this is, I would call this the comics artist's comic, because of what Perez does. He does so many different storytelling tricks, and he invents so many different new ways to approach a page. He finds different ways to do simultaneity. There's a scene in here with Supergirl where she's fighting the big bad guy, and let's see if I can find it. See, this thing always gets talked about because of like the whole tying in universes together and the marketing stuff, but what I think is really compelling about it is here's the scene where he takes one big moment, let's see if we can see this on the camera, one big moment, and he creates sub-moments with just a different panel border on there, right?
Yeah.
So like we can consider it as one moment, but then also it's her blasting in and smashing the guy in the face kind of thing. So yeah, it's people in their underwear beating each other up. It's universes being devoured by giant white clouds. Silly stuff, but it is... in my opinion, one of the finest comics ever made, regardless of... Oh, here's another one. Here's another scene right here where like this narrative is progressing in this direction, overlapping of these different reaction sequences during this big fight and everything. So, superheroes, not everybody's thing, but there are excellent superhero comics out there. And you know what? This is one of those excellent superhero comics where they don't play the whole... adult situations card, where it's like, oh, well, if this is going to be for grown-ups, let's have a rape in there someplace. And that's good. You know? This is something where kids can read it and adults can read it, and it's good for both. Not that that's like a clincher for me, but that's just something that's worth noting. And I mean, I also think So it's accessible to the general public, but it also is something where I think cartoonists would benefit from reading it. Music, I would give this one Van Halen or John Williams. Like a combination of Van Halen and John Williams alternating back and forth. Epic drama, but then also like rocking parts. It's like, yeah! Movie. I don't want to say a Michael Bay film, but something that, like, if Michael Bay did really good movies, like, if Michael Bay made art, that's what Christ on Infinite Earths would be. It would have all the explosions and everything falling apart, but it would be also, like, it would be something that would be for the ages. But it just wouldn't be just, like, a movie director going, awesome! You know? Like Cake Boss. All right, Gail?
Okay, speaking of superheroes, man, this is Superman, Secret Identity. Basically, one of my favorite Superman comics of all time, because I don't read that much Superman. This is kind of, I guess, the reverse end of the spectrum, in which you have a guy, you know, dressing up, being cool, but not really beating up that many people. It's more life-ish. To spin off, it's in a universe where there is Superman, like the comics. He's a pop culture, whatever, whatever. So a pair of parents in Kansas think it'd be a great idea to name their kid Clark Kent. So he grows up with that hangover his head. Hey, Clark, you're going to fly off and be awesome
today.
Wait a minute.
So this is actually not about Clark Kent, the real Clark Kent?
Yeah,
this is
about
a kid who's named Clark Kent.
This is about a kid who's named Clark Kent.
Interesting.
Who, in his teens, discovers that he actually does have superpowers. And then he wants to grow up and be a journalist, and it's like, well, shoot, this is all over, man.
So it's about a kid whose life maps itself onto the Superman legend.
Yeah, yeah. How he, like, grows up, learns how to deal with this, and kind of becomes a person in his own right, like making that name his own.
Kurt Busiek has written some of the best comics in the industry. If you're going to read a superhero comic, look for his name. You're going to read something good, you know? Also, Stuart Immonen is a fantastic artist, too. His stuff is really pretty to look at, isn't
it? I just, like, love the look of the entire thing. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's a lot of art eye candy, regardless of what kinds of stories that you like, right? Like, really subtle and clear, beautiful inking. So, music.
Ooh, I might double the Andrew Bird for this, I'm not sure. Something like, you know, kind of mellow, quiet, nice.
Classical, or like, what kind of like popular bands would you think of that people listen to? Like, so you're saying not Lady Gaga?
Yeah. It's like maybe a more acoustic kind of person, you know?
Okay, Yo-Yo Ma?
Mm-hmm. Perhaps.
All right, what kind of? I'm guessing if you like the show Smallville, you'd probably dig this.
Yeah.
Like for those who haven't watched Smallville, it's basically like the Superman story, but like more focusing on like the Clark story and the kind of teen drama kind of stuff, but with the fights.
Yeah. More about character than the action part.
There you go. That's a better way of saying it than what I said. I'm gonna tick off some Smallville fans. All right, we got time for one more, and then we got to bring Eli in. Whoa. Steph, you're up. Pick your favorite.
God, all right.
Choices?
Well, just throw a couple on there and just say a few words about each.
All right, so here's three of them.
All right.
My last three. Octopus Pie is a great webcomic. It's one of my favorites. It's about two roommates and basically their life in Brooklyn. And, so if you were ever 20-something in Brooklyn, you would enjoy this. It has very great, very clean animation style. She actually has a degree from SVA, School of Visual Arts and Animation, and has some of the best drawings in webcomics. They're very simple, but she really has it all down. She has great chops, I would say.
And as you said, it's a webcomic, so you can start reading it right now.
So you can go on
octopuspie.com.
You probably all heard of Fun Home. It's one of my favorite comics. The inking is gorgeous, first of all. I loved Alison Bechdel in high school. I actually haven't read much of her stuff afterwards, but I'm totally excited for her new book to come out. And this this tells a great story about a girl, her Alison Bechdel, and her relationship with her father, and basically their sexualities and
there's a lot of like really sophisticated stuff in there.
Yeah,
right?
It's really and then this is just great book here. That this is one of my favorites from
this year.
Troop 142 by Mike Dawson. So this is it's very this is basically about a bunch of teenagers in Boy Scout camp, and it, I feel like it's one of the things that I've read that's best captured, like, how kind of teenagers interact with each other. They're all kind of jerks to each other, but it's very realistic, and I think it's really great. So I would actually, for movies, I would say if you liked, like, Superbad, you'd probably really like.
Ooh, oh, there we go.
All
there
right.
We go. Yeah. Cool. All right, real quick, we'll throw out our last couple ones, me and Gail. I'm going to throw on Lewis Trondheim's Little Nothings, which is a series of autobio vignettes, strips sort of by Lewis Trondheim, the French cartoonist. But he draws himself and all the other characters as animals. He is a bird. But it has... But don't let that let you think that this is for the kids, because it certainly is not. There's what I would call sophisticated, sometimes bleak humor, but always sweet and thoughtful and funny. You know, and I, when I say it's not for kids, I think it's more that they just wouldn't care. It's like there's a strip here about him getting bitten by a lot of mosquitoes and counting the bites, you know. But his stuff is always really, really funny and really fun to read. And then I'm also going to throw in Ernie Colone recently did a book about Vlad the Impaler with Sid Jacobson. These are the guys who did the 9/11 Commission report. And Ernie Colone is always a master of his craft. I'll read anything that his name is on, because I know that it's going to have really terrific designs on the pages, and it's going to be he's a master storyteller, and he could take any subject. And if we've ever known somebody like this who's such a good storyteller that you could say, tell me a story about, you know, shoes, and then they can captivate you, that's Ernie Colone. So anything his name is on, I would recommend to anybody. And his stuff is just really solid. This guy worked on Casper the Friendly Ghost, but then also worked on Eric, Lord of Thunder, later on. But so he could do like really scary stuff and really funny stuff. And but anyway, love his stuff. So, Gail, couple?
Okay. Ultimate Spider-Man. Yes, Peter Parker is dead in one universe, but there's a cool new kid taking up the mantle. It's, you know, his trials and tribulations and learning to deal with his new powers. Morning Glories. It's kind of like Lost meets Runaways, it's been billed as. New prep school with a lot of unusual secrets and mysteries. And finally, Blacksod. Two Spanish guys made this crazy awesome, like,
wait, no, this war is furries. I don't want to look at it.
But look at how lush and gorgeous it is.
I'm kidding. No, this looks incredible.
Yeah,
yeah.
Detective solves murder mysteries, deals with race, murder, communists even. And it's all just gorgeous and really well acted. Love it.
So it's taking a lot of like the styles and symbols of like Disney animation and mapping onto a story for adults.
Exactly.
Which is another thing that's hard to get adults really signed on to, isn't it? Right? You know, is this idea that like cartoons can be for you.
Cartoons
too.
Are for people.
They're for people.
Yeah.
They're not just for children. So I think we gave a pretty good picture of the landscape. I had a lot more, but you know, we got to let Eli Nyberger in here. So what I'm going to ask you guys to do is to take your books and step out for a second. We'll let Eli in. I'm going to make some noise about a couple things. You guys can come back at the end as we close, because I wanted to make some noise about some appearances that you're going to be making.
Sure thing.
But we got events at the Ann Arbor District Library. After all, let's see. This would be. I want to say it is on Sunday. It is Sunday. Sunday, January 15th, 2012, from 1 to 4 p.m. Open Photoshop Lab time at the downtown branch of the Ann Arbor District Library, where 3 hours, show up, get to bring your own artwork. We can scan it, and you can put it on a Macintosh computer and try your hand at doing some digital coloring. This is a pretty awesome resource that AADL is making available to the local community. And I think you'd be crazy not to take advantage of it if you don't have a full version of Photoshop or Photoshop Elements at home or a nice Mac to work on. So, again, that's January 15th, 1 to 4 p.m. And other than that, I don't have any other events that I wanted to point out. So I'll just turn and say, hello, Eli.
Hello, Jersey. How are you?
How was that for vamping? Did I do okay?
That's very nicely done. Happy New Year. How's it going?
Yeah, Happy New Year to you. Good to see you. So... What do you got to share with us?
Well, I brought a couple things, and I these are all online. So I brought took the liberty of having Matt set this up. So let me jump to one of them here. Let's see. Let me make sure I got this right. Almost. Oh, here we go. All right.
Oh, Ben Hutchins.
Are you familiar with Ben Hutchins? Mm. This is an Australian guy. He does some just simply unreal line work and illustration, and his stuff is so funny and so surreal. You might call him a less narcissistic and depressed Australian James Kachalka. Does that fit?
That sounds okay. Good.
So, for example, none of this is ever about him, but okay. He also writes a lot of music, you know, and Kachalka's all got all of his Game Boy music and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Ben Hutchins does these songs with synthesized lead vocals, you know, so it's like Mac and Talk doing all the lead vocals, and they're ridiculous songs about being a pirate who has diarrhea and all this kind of stuff. But he's got a couple of different ongoing series. One of them is called Lesson Master, Master of Lessons. And basically, the setup is that there's always someone who's rude or clueless or unusual, and then Lesson Master appears and teaches them a lesson. And in this case, we find out that perhaps canonically, Lesson Master's name is Joe, and he's showing this ugly American who's visiting Australia that the word Joe is a person's name in Australia, not a drink.
And then at the end, we get a ribbon lesson learned, okay? And he flies away.
So there's a whole series of Lesson Master. I love it. It's all so funny. Then he also does this thing called Thunder Mates, which is basically rewording superhero comics.
Oh, okay.
Okay? So, for example, New Mag and More World, Make Room, Here Comes Adventurers of Adventure. The thing you simply have to understand about me, woof, is that I don't play by the same rules as the other chumps. No sweat. I'm pretty tolerant of different kinds of people, you know, and it goes on. So basically, I think that this is Captain America trying to come out to whoever this guy is.
Bucky.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, then he does posters and his music. He's all kinds of stuff. His illustrations are just fantastic. So Ben Hutchins is a really awesome guy, and Lesson Master is one of my favorite comics anywhere. Another thing I just wanted to mention is Gingerbread Girl, which is a really fantastic one-shot graphic novel by a husband and wife team, Colleen Coover and Paul Tobin. Where did the first one go? And the whole thing is right now online on Top Shelf 2.0, which is their blog. But what, you know, it's a very, very cutely drawn and
reminds
put
me of
together
like
story.
Comics.
Yeah, it's very Archie. I mean, it's you know, the braces and the freckles and all that stuff. So the whole thing is online. But basically, the plot of the story is that somewhere in the middle of her parents' ugly divorce, she made up a story, or maybe didn't make up a story, about her father, the brain surgeon, removing her homunculi from her brain, which is, you know, the image of the human body that's mapped in sensory apparatus in your brain. So like she like can't feel emotions. And she believed that homunculi turned into her twin sister, who she kind of is. And it's never quite clear. Is this an imaginary friend? Is this person crazy, or is this real? Who knows? What's really unique about this book is that it moves through a bunch of it's a Skype window. it moves through a bunch of different narrators throughout the book. It's very much told in sort of first person. So she starts talking about herself, then her girlfriend comes over and talks about her, and then the guy on the street is telling the story, and then a flying by pigeon is your narrator for a while.
Does the tone change with each new narrator?
Yeah. Each one's got their own thing, and they're telling you a little piece of the story, and it's like, why does this pigeon know so much about her? And so there's a lot of really interesting fun stuff. It's a short, quick read, but it's really beautifully done and plotted, and totally unsatisfying finish, but a really a really enjoyable story. So I like that one very much. I just wanted to point that one out. And one other quick thing, which just in case, you know, we mentioned a couple of webcomics. I know Meredith Grand's Octopus Pie is one of my favorite webcomics. But Rich Stevens of Diesel Sweeties is kind of in some ways one of the grand old men of the webcomics. At one point, his strip was syndicated in newspapers. He started as a webcomic. He tried syndication. And it was one of those things where he found that it wasn't worth it. You know, and it's kind of like, you know, it's often the It's as close as a cartoonist gets to getting signed, right? You know, for a certain type of cartoonist, that was like the pinnacle.
Oh, right? Yeah. Especially in the early 2000s. For sure. Yeah, that was a big
deal. And he pulled it off and he was like, this sucks. You know, so I think and one of the things that's really interesting to me is how he monetizes his audience. Because, you know, his main work stream, like we're always talking about, is free for anyone to view. He has just a fantastic style, real master of the pixel art. But one thing, and here's his Ziggy Stardust tee, which he's closing out. He always makes sure to let people know when he's closing out his shirts. He's got these great ties that are made by this company here in the Detroit area. I forget what the company is called. But one of the coolest things he does is he'll do portraits for you for commission. So like for $60, he'll draw a pixel version of you. And that's where my avatar comes from.
Right. I was going to say, the Electricus avatar.
That's right. And this year for the holidays, I had him he did my whole family. So now we have that framed pixel art up on the wall. And, you know, so it was really cool. And it's a way that he, you know, it's commissioned work, but it's very doable for him within his workflow. And I think it's a really interesting way to make, to, you know, kind of, I wouldn't say squeeze money out of your super fans, but give your super fans value. In excess of your content.
This is something that we can clarify, something you've said on the show many times, is that, you know, you feel skeptical about people paying for bits.
Right.
Well, you just paid for bits, but you didn't pay for bits.
I paid for the bits to be created.
Yeah, that's right. You paid for the creation of the bits specifically for you to create this one-off thing that is just your thing, right, from the guy that you like, yep, right? That's the value. Is the scarcity is the guy's time, the guy's attention to the thing.
Exactly.
Right. So instead of putting all of his comics behind a paywall, let's just do custom services, right? And custom products, right? So like, the kitty tote bag, I was following along with that, where he did a kitty tote bag and he put it to the audience. Like, should I put the reverse side of the kitty walking away with the little ex kitty butt on it or not? You know, and he let the fans vote. They voted. So then he made the tote bag with the kitty on both sides.
That's right.
So, R. Stevens, Rich Stevens.
Yep. DieselCDs.com.
And plus, he's I think his stuff, because it is in that pixel art style, it is much more accessible to the general public, who's not going to get too hung up on some of the more garish symbolism of comics sometimes, right? It's probably an easier entry point for
It's friendly. It has an 8-bit feeling to it,
you
know, and people don't – it's very easy to parse because it's low resolution. You know, so human eyes can just take it all right in. But he really does a great job with the faces and things like that. This is Nipples the Bear. We were talking about furries a little earlier. This is Nipples the Bear, and it looks like he made it with Little Sis last night. So, but you can see he goes through a wide range of expressions here without even having pupils to let you know where he's looking. So, you know, he just does a really great job with his stuff. Consummate professional, and I think that, you know, anyone who's interested in comics should be looking at his business model, if not his work directly, because it's great stuff.
Well, cool. Well, thanks, Eli. That was good food for thought, good recommendations, and also like a nice little note for the cartoonists who are watching to look at some business, get their business kung fu up to snuff. So, okay, well, then we'll just close out, and I want to take the opportunity to thank the Ann Arbor District Library for letting us do the show. Oh, I should throw in a note that we're changing our update schedule, right? We're going to go to a twice monthly, so every other week is what we're going to do for now, and this is to accommodate some different things that are going on at AADL. We've got
Secret
projects, yes. And then also Kids Read Comics coming to AADL. We got a lot coming up this late winter and early spring, so we're going to scale back on the updates. But you know what? If we find out that the demand is there, we can always go back to weekly, and we'll probably wind up getting some special guests who are not going to be able to fit into the bi-weekly schedule, and we might do some extra episodes in between. So, but for now, it's going to be every other Wednesday is when we're going to do the live show at Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time. Stephanie Manheim can be found at stephaniemanheim.com, Steph the Artist on Twitter. You can also find her at coffeespooncomics.com. She's going to be at TCAF and at SPX this year. Links will be in the show notes. So, and then Gail Williams can be found at patbird.galesore.com. Kelvarin on Twitter, K-E-L-V-A-R-I-N. And you can watch for more of her updates there. She's on the Tumblrs too. So thanks again, Eli. Thanks again, everybody, for downloading and listening. Until next time, I've been Jersey Droz of comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on Twitter. Okay, bye.